Herman Landau. I am now interviewing Sam Berman, a former resident of Louisville, who now lives in Clearwater, Florida. This is at my home in Louisville on May the 11th, 1977. All right, now Sam, tell me about your family and how they came to Louisville.
Well, prior to 1901, we were living in Cincinnati and Lancaster, Ohio. My mother and father were married in Cincinnati vicinity in 1896. I was born in Cincinnati in 1898. My next brother, Abe, was born in Louisville in 1901. So in between, we lived in Cincinnati or Lancaster, Ohio, and then came to Louisville prior to Abe's birth in 1901.
How did you happen to come to Louisville?
My father's folks lived in Louisville. My mother's folks had lived in Cincinnati. That's the reason my mother was there, and I don't know how my father happened to go to Cincinnati, but anyhow, he wanted to get to Louisville, where his father and his brothers and sisters all lived in Louisville.
And tell us about the Jewish community that you were brought up in.
Well, back in those days, the Jewish community in Louisville, as I can remember, was divided into about three different sections. There was the Preston and Walnut section, which took in the Jewish people along Preston and the streets going off of Preston, either to Floyd on the west and Jackson to the north, to the east, and running anywhere from about Jacob Street north to the river. These people went to the shul, either the B'nai Jacob, which was on Jefferson Street between Preston and Jackson, or to what became the Shmeres HaGadol. At that time, when I remember, they had a little shul on Green Street, which became Liberty Street in 1917. Yeah. They had a little shul on Green Street between Preston and Floyd until about, about 10, 11, 12, when they bought the, what was then the old St. Paul Evangelical Church at the corner of Clay at Preston Fair. And I remember when that shul was there, it was called the Shmeres HaGadol.
Yeah.
There was another section, Jewish section, was up and down Market Street. Now this Preston Street Jewish population always took in the ones on Market Street, say down to Shelby where Simon Cohen lived, say up to about 2nd Street on Market where the Meyer Berman family lived. Beyond there, west of that section, was what known as the 7th Street community. That more or less lived on 7th and 8th Street, Jefferson and Market, with stores usually on Jefferson and Market Street. Now, if they had a shul of their own, I don't remember it, but there was a congregation that went what was the 12th Street neighborhood.
They started one at 11th and Jefferson. Yeah.
And the people in the 7th Street neighborhood and west. When you got beyond 18th Street in those days, you were in the country. As far as I know, there wasn't any Jews beyond 8th or 9th or 10th, about 12th and Market in Jefferson. I don't remember any Jewish people beyond there.
Weren't there scattered mom and pop grocery stores?
Well, the city was small in those days, Herman. I remember in those days, the streetcar on Preston Street stopped at Oak. They had a turntable in the middle of the street at Oak Street. That's as far as your Preston Street car ran.
Now, were you active in the YMHA when you grew up in Louisville?
Well, my first athletics or recreation was at the neighborhood house. From about 1910 or 11, we started going to YMHA, which at that time was on First Street. And I think the main reason we went there, we had an uncle who was playing basketball, Phil Berman. He played for the YMHA, and he got us coming there.
Was that the printer?
Yes. And he started us coming there. At my first membership in the YMHA, I think, was about 1913. I think if you remember those days, were about $6 a year. I do know this, that in 1913, I had a serious illness, and when I got well, the brother of my doctor, the brother was Nathan Cann, the lawyer, he paid my membership for me, I think in 1914. I think that's the first real membership I had. Before that, I was what's known as one of these charity cases where they took in a lot of the Jewish, poor Jewish kids. And we never knew anything about paying to go to the YMHA. We just went. And we were treated as a member.
It was mostly supported by
the richer Jews. Yes, the richer Jews, yes.
Well, what about the neighborhood house? Weren't there, there were a lot of Jewish kids there.
I would say
that, weren't there?
I would say about the children you had there were Jews, Italians, and Irish. And we ran around, was together. I remember one boy, and he could talk Jewish better than I could. He went to cater with us. I'm trying to think of his name, but he lived at First Walnut.
Where did you go to cater?
The first cater I went to was on Floyd Street, north of Market, on the east side of the street, on the corner. There was a grocery store. Behind that, it was Maryland's?
Rosenthal?
Yeah, Reverend Rosenthal. There was another Malamut, or had a cater, on Jefferson Street, about five houses, east of Jefferson, of Preston, Friedman was his name. Now there was a delicatessen which later became Feitelson, was run by Mrs. Stein, who married Feitelson. They had Cooper's carpet store, and then Friedman lived next door. And then four or five blocks, houses down was Benyonkin. And by the way, that was another shul. At the time, the Shmeres HaGadol, they also had Benyonkin of B'nai Jacob on Jefferson Street. And as far as I know, they were the only two cheders in those days. Later on, they started a cheder in the Shmeres HaGadol shul in the basement, or in the back, not a basement, but the back room. And I think that that was free. You went to Friedman or Rosenthal, you had to pay. Now, who operated it, I don't know, but I recall that the chazan from B'nai Jacob used to come in once or twice a week and sort of supervise the instructor. I think they had two instructors in those days.
Did the Beth Midrash HaGadol Cheder become the Louisville Hebrew School?
I think so.
After
they built the building on Walnut Street, about four houses east of Brook, which was the Louisville Hebrew School building, and they had the mikveh in that same building.
Yeah.
And that was the nucleus. I think the cheder at Shmeres HaGadol was the nucleus of the Louisville Hebrew School.
Now, were you active in various things like the Boy Scouts? And
no, we could never afford to join the Boy Scouts. And I was getting a little too old for it.
Well, then later on, though.
Well, see, I went to work at the YMHA when I was about 16 years old. So I had my activities at the YMHA. And of course, when I was 18 years old, I went in the Army.
What were you doing at the Y?
I was just what you might call a clerk at the desk on regulars. Salary.
Well, and Can you tell us about the program there at that time?
Well, it wasn't too big. The main function, Doc Isaac was the athletic director.
It was still on First Street then?
No. When I worked there in 16.
Oh, that was after they moved.
At 14. 1914, right after they moved to Second.
They had just opened a new building.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I can't recall the name of the man who was the director, but they had a woman in there. She and I run the office, and this director, and this man was prior to Louis Cohn. Louis Cohn came in after I left there as director. Doc Isaacs run the athletic section, and they were more and less leaned toward the literary angle of this. And they had this literary and society of
Junior Social and Literary
Society. Yeah, JS&LS.
Yeah. Were you part of that?
Yes, I belonged to that. And they had a very active, back in those days, they had a very active Jewish orchestra that Bingo Shapoff was the head of. And they put on concerts during the winter, which drew big. The big thing those days, though, was basketball. And the annual marathon race on Thanksgiving morning.
The Thanksgiving Day cross country race.
Yeah, well, they call it the marathon, yeah. Or cross country.
Yeah.
It started their second in college. And which way it went, I don't know. But they ended there. In those days, the YMHA was the leaders of amateur athletics in town. They had what was probably the best basketball team they had here. A team like Vanderbilt would come to Louisville to play U of L. They also played the YMHA team.
Yeah, that was the major Fall City League.
No, this wasn't a league, see? The league came in.
The league came later?
No, the league was there. This was during the season, this was an extra game. Oh. I remember Josh Cody was playing for Vanderbilt in those days. A very popular fellow. He talked to all of the youngsters, you know. They idolized these athletes those days. They did the same thing to today. But here are all these organizations that had basketball teams, like the LMA Club in New Albany, and Trinity, and the others. The Vanderbilt would play University of Louisville and YMHA in that little bandbox up there, which I thought was a wonderful thing for the Jewish people. And then, of course, the highlight of the winter athletics was this, as you mentioned, the basketball league. And we had several players that got angry with the YMHA for some reason or another and left us what to play for the K&I. And we ended up beating them. And a couple of years later, these two boys came back to the YMHA team. And one of them was Tony Landwich, if you remember him.
I remember the name.
Mm-hmm. We always had Gentiles on the team. And they had a good ball team all the time. It was Herman Shapinski, Nathan Moreland, Hirschman's, and they were all good. Judy Joseph from across the river. Lefty Marks, I think, was Frank Marks. He was one of the good players. And they had a good team, one to be proud of in those days.
What did you do after you came back from the Army?
Well, after I came back, I got out of the Army in January, and I knocked around hunting for work, and I didn't really do anything permanent until I went to work at the LNN in September 1919, and stayed there, and I retired in 63. Of course, I lost more or less track of all my friends here because, well, I went to work for them in 1919. By 1925, I started traveling for the company. And from 1925 to 1944, I was gone about 75% of the time. From 44 to about 55, I was only gone about 40% of the time. And 55 to 63, I was again gone about 90% of the time. So I really lost track of the activities going on in Louisville. I'd go to functions of a family, affairs, and, but other than that, I didn't have too much contact. In 1931, I took a training course in the Boy Scout leadership, and I took over the Troop 111 from Morris Grossman. I was scoutmaster for 2 years. And then I had to give that up because my traveling took up too much of my time. Is that your phone?
It's the phone.
Now, at that time also, Rabbi Gilman appointed me as a sort of, I wouldn't say superintendent of the Sunday school, but they brought the collection money to me and I banked it.
How big was the Sunday school at that time?
They had about, I don't remember, 6 or 8 classes. I had the graduating class last year. I wasn't able to go with them until the graduation because I was assigned to work in Atlanta, and I wouldn't get home until Saturday morning from Atlanta, and I'd have to work the office Saturday and Sunday, and I couldn't go down to Sunday school, and I had to give that up at the same time I gave up a Boy Scout work. And for that reason, I had to drop out of scouting. So I really lost contact with all the Jewish activities in the world.
What changes have you noticed in the Jewish community in Louisville over a period of years?
That they're not as close as they were in those days. It was a close-knit community. And everybody looked up to the head rabbi, like Rabbi Zorke. What he said was law. Now, when I talk about this, I'm talking about the Orthodox and conservative branch of Judaism. As far as the Reformed branch, I don't know. See? I didn't come in contact with them too much. Because I wasn't one of the rituals.
Yeah.
And if I remember correctly, they didn't have too much contact at the YMHA, other than the financial backers. We were just a different breed of people in those days, I guess.
You mean they supported the YMHA on a more like a settlement house idea that the
I wouldn't go that far, Herman. I would say this, that they paid their dues. See? And that's as far as I would say. They certainly didn't take too much part in the activities as the bunch that I was raised up was around the neighborhood house and eventually went to the YMHA. That was the backbone of the YMHA those days.
What other organized community activities were there in those days?
As far as I know, there wasn't any, as far as we were concerned.
The shul picnics?
Shul picnics.
Tell us about the shul picnics.
The shul picnics were either at Summers Park. Prior to that, it was at Sennings Park. A lot of people don't recall Sennings Park. That was at the entrance into Jacobs or Iroquois Park, those times the 4th Street car line was by 3rd Street and by 7th Street.
Yeah.
The 7th Street car line took you out to Summers Park.
Yeah.
The third streetcar line took you to Sallisbury. And even before those places, the big picnics were held at Phoenix Hill Park. Now, of course, a lot of people today don't know what a Phoenix Hill Park was.
Where was it?
Well, you know where the Baxter Avenue station is.
Yeah.
You went up Baxter Avenue there on the right-hand side, about a block up the hill, was the Phoenix Hill Brewery. Beyond that was an open air space that had a big pavilion, dance floor, and place for booze, overlooking Clifton. It was up on the hill there. Now that was the ideal place for summer picnics. After that was torn down, that's when they started going to Sendings and Summers.
Did Phoenix Hill get its name from the brewery, or did the brewery get its name from the hill?
I don't know that. I know that the Phoenix Hill Brewery belonged to Frank Fair's. Frank Fair made their light beer at Preston Fair, which at that time was still called Preston Green. See, the whole street was called Green.
Yeah.
And during the war, on account of the notorious section on Green, west of, say, 6th Street, they changed the name there to Liberty. So they changed the name east of Preston from Green to Fair. And as I said, the light beer was made at the Frank Fair Brewery. The dark beer, or what was known in those days, common beer, was made at Phoenix Hill. They didn't make any light beer at Phoenix Hill at all. That was all common beer.
Well, tell us more about the Shule picnics now.
Well, as a kid, you know, you had the usual fun that you'd have at any picnic. We'd always look forward to it. Now, all the activities, social activities in the winter were at, I think the name was Liberty Hall, on Market Street, between 11th and 12th, directly across where Lincoln Brothers Bakery is. Also, there was a hall on Jefferson Street, three or four doors west of First, on north side of the street. It was a big hall where they'd have weddings and socials. Tony Landry's father had a bar room on the first floor, and his hall was on the second floor. I remember going to weddings there, all the weddings from our section of Louisville were all held at that hall there. But of course, you went on a streetcar in those days. You didn't have horse and buggies even, because most of the people didn't have horse and buggies. Of course, automobiles were not in the picture as yet. We'd go to these picnics, take our lunch along with it, and go home before dark. Usually walk home. From where I live, we could walk either Phoenix Hill or to this social hall at First and Jefferson. If we come going to Sendings or Summers, that meant car fare.
Yeah.
We couldn't afford it, except, say, once or twice a year. You know, money those days was a premium for us.
Yeah.
We got to the point where you got a dime a week, you was getting a big allowance. Most of the boys sold papers. I don't recall any of the boys that delivered papers, but all of them sold papers. We had three papers in those days, Courier, Times, and the Herald. I think I started selling papers when I was about 10 years old. And that's where we got our spending money. Besides what we gave to home to help support, put food on the table. Yeah.
Well, what else you got to tell me about the good old days?
Well, it's one of those things, Irvin, that you think about in your own mind, but you don't know how to express it.
Yeah.
And if you ask me questions, I'll answer them. But to think I'm up to tell you, I've hit a blank wall. What do you want to know?
Well, I want to know, you know, how people lived, how the community was
organized. They lived better than they do today. They were closer.
In what way?
And closer. They all went to shul on Saturday. The majority of them went Friday night. They didn't eat their supper until they came home on Friday night. I won't say they were religious, but they were God-fearing. Probably a better way to express it.
Big family gatherings?
Yes, sir. Big family gatherings.
That was the primary entertainment in those days.
A bar mitzvah, a bris, a wedding, everybody went. There wasn't any such things as written invitations. It was word of mouth to ear, and people came to enjoy themselves. They were all community propositions. Nobody thought of having to have an expensive ticket to go to shul on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Everybody was a member in those days. Now, as you know, what happens if you haven't got a ticket, you don't get in.
What was the Jewish community's relationship with the rest of the community?
Of course, as I said, I lost contact more or less when I became an adult. And as a youngster, you didn't pay a heck of a lot of attention to that. But I would say it was good. We played with the Gentile kids as if they were Jews, and they played with us as if they were going. Or we were going, see. I mean, there wasn't any holdback. They respected our way of thinking, we respected theirs.
Did you run into any discrimination when you went to work for the LNN?
No. Well, I would say no. For the simple reason, when I went there, I got my job with the LNN through the man who was my commanding officer in the Army. Colonel Colson. I was the only Jewish person in the freight traffic department of the LNN Railroad. As far as I know, there was only one Jewish person there before me. That was a fellow by the name of Sherman, Milton Sherman, who had a brother named Alec Sherman. He lived around Preston and Madison. After I came, Lou Kleiman came here, and Bob Simon. And Bob Simon's wife, Helen of Jacobs, her last name, from Frankfurt. And that's the only people that I knew, Jewish people, in the freight traffic department, where I've put in 45 years. But I didn't find any discrimination as a whole. There was sparks of it here and there. There was discrimination, Protestant by Catholic, Catholic by Protestant. But whole outright discrimination, I never encountered any of that.
What about the Army? Were you at Camp Taylor?
We were at Camp Taylor. I joined right 14 days after war was declared, I was in the Army. I had joined originally the old 1st Kentucky Infantry. We were stationed at the Armory when I joined, and there we went to the fairgrounds. And from the fairgrounds, we went out to the site that was going to be Camp Taylor. There was no buildings there. We lived in tents. I recall I was in the detached medical department of the 1st Kentucky Infantry. We went into the first barracks that was built and set up a dispensary. And we stayed there until the first drafted men came in and took over the camp of guarding the camp. We were actually guarding the camp, is what the reason they sent us out there. And when they had enough drafted men to form a detachment, they took over and we went to Camp Shelby in Mississippi. The first building that I recall was finished in Camp Taylor was what would be Dorrit Lane and Poplar Level Road, approximately in that section. It was the first permanent building built in Camp Taylor.
Were you in contact with any of the Jewish programming that was done at the at Camp Taylor?
There wasn't any in our day.
Arthur Kling started
on. We were gone, say, within a month after the first draft of men came in. And there wasn't any such thing. Didn't have any wives, social people there at all. There wasn't any kind of organized or even unorganized sociability. We didn't run into that until we got down to Camp Shelby, and even down there we didn't have that till the last 6 months we were at Camp Shelby before we went overseas. We had a little in Hattiesburg, but it wasn't very much. And that was used, if I remember correctly, that was sponsored by the Jewish community in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. Actually, in all my days in the Army, which was a period of 2 years, I served 2 years, I never did run into any active Jewish workers. The old JWB, the Jewish Welfare Board, was just coming in when war was over. That is in the neighborhood where I was stationed in France. So we didn't come in contact with any Jewish sociability. We come in contact with the YMCA people who, if they got three or more men together, they had Bible study or Sunday school classes or something, see? So we didn't have much use for the YMCA as a whole. Now, I'm not talking about myself and I'm not criticizing them. The only people, I would say this, the only people ever did for anything for my outfit was the Salvation Army people.
Oh, you went to law school after you came out of the Army?
I went to law school in, I graduated and admitted the bar in 1925, Jefferson School of Law. I think it was in the first fall class, session of the 1921 session of the Court of Appeals where I sworn in Kentucky bar. I graduated from Jefferson in May or June of 1925.